Hello, welcome on in to Hardcore Penn State Football. Hope you're doing well. Welcome back. This is episode number 2, and we are going full steam ahead. Have a lot of talked about today, so we're going to kind of get right into it. I'm Corey Listoki. If you missed the first episode, you can obviously find that on our YouTube channel. Doesn't really apply much anymore because we've kind of moved on past Ohio State. Not much else you can preview about a game that you've already done. But nonetheless, if you are listening on the podcast on audio only, just a friendly reminder, you can catch me out live on YouTube Sunday and Thursday nights at 9 p.m. And if you are live with us, then we can answer some questions live as we kind of go. But otherwise, that's fine too. You can also follow us on social media. You can find that at Hardcore PSUFB, pretty much anywhere you get your podcasts or anywhere you get your social media, you can find us there. So with that being said, let's get into the first thing I wanted to talk about today. And to be honest with you, it's something that I don't really understand why Penn State fans were so upset with. But at the conclusion of the Ohio State game on Saturday night, they decided that we were going to be upset about Ohio, not even really a full rush, because it wasn't everybody, but I would say maybe 1,000 or two, maybe 3,000 fans stormed the field. And I thought it was funny that Penn State fans were so upset about it. I don't understand why, to be honest with you. I don't get why that is so upsetting. Look, I get it. We were 18-point underdogs, and you know, we're the number 20 team in the country or high-ranked team. It doesn't really make sense. But here's my counterpoint to that. And if you disagree, fine. That's okay. We're allowed to disagree with each other. My counterpoint to that is pretty simple. Why do we care? Why would you care? Let them celebrate any way they want to celebrate. We only get, as college football fans, we only get about 7 home games every year for our favorite teams. On top of that, you know, we only get so many really good anticipated home games because you have a couple clankers throughout the year. So you're really not, you know, you really don't have that many, I don't know what the word is, games you would even consider storming the field for. Storm the field capable games. And so given the opportunity, and although I don't agree with it, like I wouldn't do it, I don't really care that they did do it. Let them do their own thing. If that's cool for them, it's cool for them. I'm okay with it because, to be honest with you, it doesn't bother me that much. There are worse things in the world than Ohio State storming the field. And if you're going to be upset because we lost and you're going to be a sore loser, that's fine. But there are a lot worse things out there than to be upset about that. And I would just say, don't worry about it. Now, as our friend Joe Hermit said, and this is a very, very good point, and I'm glad he threw that out there because it is an important point. From a safety perspective, I 100% disagree with it. From a safety perspective, we should probably not be letting people do that. But, you know, it's a lot easier to say, you know, say that than to actually be able to do it. So, whatever. Again, I don't think you're going to win those arguments most of the time. But if you want to fight them, you can. But from a safety perspective, I totally understand why you wouldn't want them to do it. And I get it. I really do get it. And so, with, you know, from that perspective, I can totally understand why they would, you know, why we don't let people do it. And I'm surprised but the Big Ten doesn't have a fine in place for things like that. But, you know, what are you going to do? So, what are you going to do about it? That's my thoughts on it. Let me know what you guys think about storming the field in any circumstance, especially, obviously, in circumstances if where maybe, you know, it is warranted. I mean, I stormed the field when Penn State beat Ohio State in 2016. And it was almost encouraged by the Penn State staff. Q, what's up, Q? How are you doing? Thanks for being here. Well, Q, well, for one, they're not supposed to be on the field. But again, the safety issues as far as people, you know, when people storm the field, it's not really an organized process. People tend to get crazy. They run, they sprint, they run people over, they jump on top of people, they climb over people. That's when things, you know, it turns into the antelope running over Mufasa in The Lion King. So that I can see the issue with it. But I don't see, I don't see from a sore loser perspective why Penn State fans care. I don't care. There's much better things to care about than that. And we're going to talk about those today. But I thought I'd give my two cents to kind of lead into the college football conversation today. And that is what I'm going to start with. Let me see if I can get a couple more things up here. So the way I kind of wanted to do it today is break down this from an entire perspective. So just to give an idea of how the podcast is going to go today, we're going to talk about the game as in its entirety. We're going to do a quarter-by-quarter breakdown here. So that's what we're going to start with. And then we're going to talk about briefly about, you know, what happened around the country. Because remember, I said last on Thursday that it's important to keep a perspective on Penn State with everything else that's going on, especially in the Big Ten. We had some pretty important Big Ten games as well. And then we're going to talk about the blue and the white, and that the blue being bad and the white being good. So we're going to, you know, point out some things that, you know, I'm feeling pretty good about, Those will be the white things, and also some blue things, things that were bad, a little sad. As James Franklin just tweeted 1-0. I'm sure people will love that after the 3-game losing streak. And then we're going to have Marty Leap on from Black Shoe Diaries. Have him on to the podcast. He'll be the first interviewee of Hardcore Penn State Football. So excited to have him on as well to talk some Penn State football. Then we're going to talk about the Penn State offense and the Penn State defense as a whole, collectively, things I saw. Any best takes or questions? And then we will do a brief, just a little brief, tiny little peek ahead to Maryland. Obviously, the Thursday broadcast will be much, much more in-depth for the Maryland game, which is officially a 3:30 kick on Saturday. With that being said, I think we are good to kind of jump on into this. And this game probably couldn't have started any better for Penn State than how it started. I mean, well, I shouldn't say that. It could have, right? Because on the very first drive, you win the coin toss, you defer to the second half, so Ohio State's going to get the ball first, and you're feeling pretty good about it. And then all of a sudden, your defense forces a turnover. Jeremy Ruckert fumbles the ball 4 plays into the game. Penn State recovers, and you're like, wow, the defense already did it. They're already getting things going for us. Life is good. And then, all of a sudden, things went bad for Penn State right off the bat. Very first play from scrimmage, Noah Cain fumbled it right back to Ohio State, and the Buckeyes get the ball. And you're just like, are you kidding me right now? Like, did that just happen? Like, everything that we just did. And all of a sudden, our defense gets us a quick stop. We needed quick stops. We needed to not squander opportunities. We talked about converting on turnovers on Thursday, and we come out and we turn the ball right back over to them. So a little bit of a missed opportunity there, obviously. And Ohio State got the football back. And you're wondering at this point, okay, so how is the defense going to respond? And I think this is an important part. We've heard James Franklin talk about this many times. And he talks about the defense being able to react to situations, sudden change, I believe is the word he used, and how you react when things go wrong or when you're put onto the field in a situation you're not necessarily prepared for. But I never have heard him talk about it in the context of the offense being a sudden change offense. Like, oh, look, your defense got a turnover probably in a way you didn't expect them to, and now you're on the field really fast. Was Noah Cain truly in the right mental state that early in the game? I don't know, but he fumbled on the very first play. So that was interesting to me. I'm not sure that would be a good enough question to ask Mr. Coach Franklin, but at the same time, like, why didn't it seem like the offense wasn't ready to go out on the field? Because of the very first play, they fumbled it and gave the ball back to Ohio State. Now, thankfully, Ohio State ended up punting. No harm, no foul. And although they pinned Penn State back, Penn State went on a 89-yard drive, 13 plays, ended up with a touchdown to Brenton Strange. They were 3 for 3 on the drive. Did everything really well. Sean Clifford looked really good, and they did. They gave you an idea of, hey, they might be able to compete in this game because Sean Clifford looked so much better. We talked about it on Thursday. Is Sean Clifford going to be close enough to 100% to really give them a chance? And the answer was yes. The answer was 100% yes. He looked good enough to win this football game for him. And you've got to be impressed by that. Ohio State marched right back down the field, got themselves a field goal. They converted on 2 third-and-longs. But, I mean, what are you going to do, right? I mean, Ohio State, they find ways to convert on 3rd-and-longs. They have wide receivers that are able to convert on 3rd-and-longs, a good offensive line to do so. But to this point, Penn State had done a good job on Travion Henderson, but still holding Ohio State to a field goal. You're feeling, okay, 7-3, life is good. Our offense just went on 89-yard touchdown drive, and life is good. You're going to get the football back, you know, still up by 4. And then Penn State had their third offensive drive, and that ended up being a whopping 3-and-out. Ran the ball 1 time for 2 yards and a 3-and-out and punted the ball back to Ohio State. Now, that is kind of, you know, this next drive for Ohio State was the first missed, really big missed opportunity, and not necessarily Penn State's fault. So there's the play where Ohio State tried to, I don't know, snap the football, and it rolled back, and they called it a snap infraction, but it was really a fumble. It doesn't matter how bad the snap is. Just because you suck at snapping the football doesn't mean it's a penalty. That was on a 3rd-and-2. Penn State had recovered the fumble, but they blew the whole entire play dead. It's not reviewable upstairs, and so it was a 5-yard penalty, and it was a 3rd-and-7. The Ohio State actually converted on that 3rd-and-7. They ended up punting a little bit later from Penn State's 45-yard line. But that moment, if Penn State recovers that and they call it correctly, Penn State has the ball up 4 at the 20-yard line. And you're thinking, okay, they have a chance, 14-3, at the very worst, 10-3. And things are feeling pretty good all of a sudden for Penn State. Instead, Ohio State, like I said, punts the football. And we head into the second quarter. And the second quarter to me was one of missed opportunities in some ways, because there was times where Penn State maybe could have done something. They just really didn't. And it happened on that first drive in the second quarter. Penn State's moving the ball. They have a 3rd-and-5. And Keandre Lambert-Smith catches the ball, but his toe just was barely out of bounds, therefore making it an illegal touching. Can't really go out of bounds and then touch the football. That actually happens later on in game 2. And so instead of a 3rd-and-5 conversion, lost it down. 4th-and-5, they go for it. Clifford sacked. He was sacked a lot in this game. The offensive line was really struggling in pass protection. There was one time they gave him a really nice pocket, and I was like, wow, that was a fantastic job. But there was too many times. And Ohio State brought pressure. I mean, Ohio State brought the heat, and they brought the heat a lot. So, you know, you can say what you want, but they brought some pressure, and it worked. They got there. So, whatever. So, Ohio State gets the ball, and you're like, okay, not good. Like, they're around midfield. They have a chance to go down, and Ohio State goes 3-and-out. Defense gets a huge stop. Again, another punt from Ohio State in Penn State's territory. I think that was the 3rd one already in the first half. So, 3 punts. Maybe a little bit of a conservative play calling from Ryan Day, thinking, hey, we just got to outlast them. We're going to figure it out. It's worth it. Pin their offense back. It'll be worth it. And he was kind of right. The 5th drive came. Clifford ran for 10 yards, but then he was sacked and then ended up having a punt again. And then that was kind of the missed opportunity. You had the turnover on downs. You had the punt. And it's only so long you can hold this explosive Ohio State offense back. And then on Ohio State's 6th drive, There was a pass interference on Tariq Castro Fields, and then moments later, Chris Olave, 38-yard touchdown bomb. I talked it over before the bloggy, and it looked like it was potentially Tariq Castro Fields' fault. Not sure if it was cover 6 or cover 3 exactly, without knowing the play call, but clearly someone is probably supposed to have that third of the field, and one of them, Brisker or Fields, made the mistake. Olave was wide open on a crossing, deep crossing route over the middle of the field. And it was 7 points for Ohio State, just like that. And they took the lead 10-7. And you're like, well, that was a missed opportunity. You had the Ohio State offense kind of stalling. Penn State's defense was doing well, but after two unsuccessful drives by the Penn State offense, Ohio State finally got going. And 10-7, you're like, well, you know, Penn State's still doing okay. Things are okay. They get their next drive, and they did not quit in this game. And this is going to be a point that we're going to talk about a lot. They really never quit. And that drive coming off the Olave touchdown, Clifford threw three straight first down passes for 18 yards, 10 yards, and 10 yards. And you're thinking, okay, here we go. This is good. Like, we've got rhythm. We've got tempo. Things were really good when Penn State had tempo. That's something we're going to talk about a little bit later. From Ohio State's 37-yard line, Clifford drops back. He gets sacked. Both offensive tackles got beat like a drum. And unfortunately, it was a fumble picked up by the defensive lineman in return. And it's just one of those moments you're just like, God damn. Missed opportunity again, and maybe a potential 14-point swing. So you go from, you know, maybe 14-10 to all of a sudden it's 17-7. And a lot of people right there are writing Penn State off, right? A lot of people are like, eh, this one's over. This one's done. But, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to Penn State's offense. And Sean Clifford, probably being the leader he was, you know, stepped up big, because I didn't expect them to go down and get any points. They led a drive right before the half, and they get a field goal. They make it a 10-17 game, and they get the ball to start the second half. And you're thinking, okay, like, things could be a lot worse right now. And we're doing okay. Like, we're not doing great, but we're doing okay. For that being the first half, not really going Penn State's way that much, and you're only down by 10 and you get the ball, like, that's okay. Like, we can do something with that. And then the third quarter starts, and they have a fantastic drive. Now, they got bailed out a little bit. I shouldn't say bailed out, but they got assisted a little bit. There was a targeting call on Ohio State's player. They had the roughing the passer call not too much later. The roughing the passer and the targeting call, based off of the rule, were the right decisions. And I should go back and say the officials missed two holding calls bad on Penn State's field goal drive, but whatever. They miss it. Sucks to suck. But those two calls in that first drive in the second half, I think, were the right calls. They get all the way down inside Ohio State's 3-yard line. They go with a new play that was installed this week. It was kind of a tweak to the Tyler Warren Wildcat. They brought in Jahan Dotson, direct snapped it to him, and he kind of faked the sweep one way, and then he went back towards the near side, got one block, and was able to extend the ball over for a touchdown to tie the game up at 17. And again, Penn State fans feeling pretty good at that point, right? I mean, you got to – Ohio State knotted up in the second half, and your offense is clicking enough, and you assume your defense was going to, you know, continue to, you know, help you out the way they've been playing. But honestly, there was two drives here, and it just maybe wasn't the most complimentary of days for the offense and the defense, because as you score a touchdown, you have all the momentum, and then Ohio State comes right back down the field. Jackson Smith and Jigba had an awesome catch and run, 58 yards. They were knocking on the door to score. It was fourth and goal from the one. Travion Henderson false starts, so they decided to kick the field goal. But still, 2017 at that point, but you're hoping the defense can put a goose egg up on that first drive so Penn State isn't losing again. The ninth drive for Penn State was not much better. They ended up punting, didn't get anything going. I think they got one first down and they punted. Ohio State gets the ball back, and this is when things get bad, right? Because Travion Henderson breaks a 68-yard run, and you're just like, you're waiting for that almost if you're Penn State's defense, because Henderson has that ability to kind of just ruin things for you. And that's kind of what happened, right? I mean, two plays later, he's in the end zone for a touchdown, and now that lead is extended. It went from 20-17 to 27-17, and you're like, kind of like, okay, does Penn State's offense really have it? Like, can they come back? Can they score 27 points on Ohio State? Like, can they even do that? Well, they could, because the very next drive, and again, just the resiliency of this offense, every time Penn State gave up a score to Ohio State, this offense came right back and scored. And Clifford completed five straight passes, and they went to that weird straight up, I don't know if you want to call it a bone formation, wishbone formation, and Kevon Lee walked into the end zone for a touchdown. And again, that's kind of the moment you realize, okay, they have a chance to actually maybe win this football game because they've continued to answer over and over and over again. And things are going your way. So you get the touchdown there. So now it's 27-24, and you're begging your defense at this point to please get you a stop, right? Please find a way to get us a stop. Ohio State gets the ball back. There's a defensive pass interference on Joey Porter Jr., the right call. And Ohio State's in field goal range. They get a third down stop. Ryan Day says, nope, we're going to go for it, being up three, saying, hey, a field goal doesn't do much for us. They go for it. It's a weird play, miscommunication. Penn State's defense isn't even in the right area, and it's an incomplete pass. Turnover on downs. They're like, okay, we are in business heading into the fourth quarter because all of a sudden we have the ball and we're only down by three, and we just scored a touchdown on our last drive. So again, things are looking good. And this is what I'm talking about, where they weren't very complimentary of each other, right? Like they weren't really helping each other out for a lot of this game, because again, the offense got going, and right when the offense got going, the defense started getting leaky again. Now the defense gets a stop. Can the offense keep it going? They just did something. Can they keep it going? And then all of a sudden, down by just three, on a second and nine, Sean Clifford gets pressured and he forces a pass. Not even really that close. It's picked off. And you give Ohio State the ball right back in field goal range again. And you're just like, son of a gun, that is not what we wanted right now. That is not what we needed at all. And unfortunately for Penn State, and credit the defense again for holding Ohio State to a field goal. But a field goal there keeps you still in the running of things, right? I mean, keeps you alive, gives you a chance. But again, when the defense is playing good, the offense could not help them out. They get the ball back, a three and out, and they have to punt the ball back again. And you're just like, are you kidding me? We really needed a moment right here for the offense to move the ball, at least give them a chance. And the offense, again, finishes the game with an interception, a punt. Ohio State milks it all the way down the field, gets another field goal, gives them a 9-point lead, and then on a final drive, Penn State drives all the way down to the Ohio State's 31-yard line. Clifford had completed four straight passes, then misses his next three. You're down by nine, kick the field goal. You can get an onside kick, and you're going to need one anyway. And Jordan Stout misses a 49-yard field goal, 100% in his range, and he just missed it. So that would do it for the game. But again, it's just the lack of complementary football that we'd seen from Penn State through the first six games. It just wasn't there. When offense was doing well, the defense wasn't. When the defense was doing well, the offense wasn't. And the icing on the cake was Jordan Stout missing a field goal. So that was kind of the run-through of the game. That's kind of how it went. One other pregame note I wanted was that Taquan Roberson was not the number two quarterback going into the game. That would have been Christian Veleu. And so I don't know what that means as far as Roberson, but Veleu getting the start or the backup spot really kind of says things. So keep that in mind if Sean Clifford can't get healthy. See what that means for us, but that seems like Roberson's probably not going to take another snap in Penn State football. Before we get into the blue and the white, and the bad and the good, some scores around the country. Wisconsin just defiling Iowa, 27-7. Iowa has lost two straight since booing injured players. I'm not saying karma is a real thing, but it sure seems to be the case. Sucks to suck, Iowa. I feel I would be okay if Ferentz never wins another football game again. But that's just my opinion. And it would be even funnier if he has to fire his own son. But that's just me. We have about 5 minutes or so until Marty Leap, and he's actually in the call waiting. And I'm going to put my earbud in. And we might do the blue and white after we talk to Marty, because I said we'd talk to Marty at approximately 9:30. So we might talk about the good and the bad after the case. Let me see here. Marty, can you hear me right now? Let me see if I can get Marty in here or not. 1 second. And Marty, I have a lot of great questions for Marty, so this will be a good time. If you have questions for Marty Leap as well, again, coming from Black Shoe Diaries, has been writing about Penn State football for a very, very long time. And I've known Marty for a very, very long time as well. So, as soon as I hear him, we'll get going on this. I don't think he's in here yet. So let's talk about the good and the bad real quick while we wait for him. Let's talk with the blue first, the blue and the white. Let's talk blue as in bad first. I think when you look at this game, you're going to have to look at, you know, the fact that they still can't run the football, right? I mean, being unable to run the football is going to be an issue. And it has been. I don't know if that's something that's ever going to get fixed this year. I think at some point you kind of just have to give up on it and realize you're not going to be able to do it. I know you run underneath, do whatever you can, but otherwise I don't think you can try to run up the middle as much as they have been. And Marty, I just sent you a link via Twitter, and we'll see if we can get you in here. But I don't think the running game is something you can lean on in any capacity moving forward, which is kind of unfortunate. But I think we're past that point. I think, you know, we're way past that point in the season, to be honest with you. So, there we go. Okay, I think we have Marty on here now. So we're going to skip over, come back to the blue and white. We'll come back to around the country. We're kind of jumbling around a little bit here, but we're going to go back and talk to Mr. Marty. And you guys should not be able to hear him yet, but Marty, I can hear you. Can you hear me fine?
I can hear you fine, yeah.
All right, so. Okay, sweet. Let me. Yeah, we should be good there. Let me switch us over real quick to the interview screen. Make sure we get you up on there. There we go. And we will be good to go here. There we go. Okay, let me unmute you so everyone else can hear you. And we are proud to have, you are the very first guest on the show. Welcome in Marty Leap from Black Shoe Diary. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I want to make sure that, make sure we have you 100%. On the audio. Okay, we have you. So we are all good. Well, I'm just going to let you talk and rant for a second. What are your thoughts on the game?
You know, coming out of this game, I definitely feel a lot better about the rest of the season than I did going into it. You know, when you come off a loss to a team as bad as Illinois and the way they lost that game, and you throw in having Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State left, as well as a Maryland team that can be explosive on offense, and a Rutgers team that always plays Penn State stuff, or plays Penn State tough, excuse me. It's tough to feel confident, but, you know, Penn State played their best game of the season, in my opinion, on Saturday night. Maybe the Auburn game is a little bit better because there weren't some of the mistakes we saw on Saturday with the scoop and score fumble and that interception and whatnot. But coming out of the game, I feel a lot more confident about the rest of the season than I did. Before the season, I predicted the Nittany Lions would go 9-3. I definitely think that is still in play after Saturday night. And ultimately, I think they wind up 8-4. I think they will split the Michigan schools. But the team for the remainder of the season definitely looks a lot better than you anticipated. And to me, the biggest thing is Sean Clifford. You know, I didn't expect Sean to look as healthy as he did on Saturday. Oh, excuse me, sorry. But with him healthy, they're probably the second best team in the Big Ten, maybe third best behind Michigan State. So now that he's healthy, again, that's the biggest reason why you've got to feel confident about this team's ability to finish strong down the stretch and then hopefully cap the season off with a bowl victory.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel that great after that because we were starting to talk about some of the things we don't feel wonderful about. But there are things to be positive about. I do kind of want to get your realistic expectation. We still have some really tough opponents left on our schedule. I mean, going to Maryland. Maryland beat Penn State last year. Obviously, Michigan at home. You have Rutgers, who at this point I think we could say they could take care of Rutgers. But then obviously traveling to East Lansing to finish the year. What is the realistic expectation for Penn State moving forward?
I mean, the rest of the season, if you're Penn State, you've got to expect to be able to take care of business against Maryland. Maryland, you know, like you said, they beat Penn State last year, but that was a Penn State team that at the time definitely looked like they had basically quit on the season after the 0-2 start. And I think going into this game, my biggest concern is under James Franklin, Penn State, following the Ohio State game, is 1-6. Against the spread and 2-5 overall. And two of those losses have come against Maryland in 2014 and last year. So you've got to be leery of that. But if the team comes out with even half the intensity they did on Saturday night, they should take care of the Terrapins. Rutgers will play Penn State tough. They always will. It's Greg Schiano. Schiano's going to play everybody tough. He should win that. And the way I look at Michigan and Michigan State, I think right now, the Michigan State game, you're predicting any Lions to lose. However, I could foresee a scenario where going into the last game of the season, Michigan State has picked up a loss along the way. Maybe Mel Tucker's on his way to LSU, and the Spartans maybe aren't as inspired as they are right now. But my big game in all of this is going to be Michigan. Michigan really, really struggled on Saturday when Michigan State went with tempo. Penn State's offense this season has found success when going with tempo. So I think if they come out and go some tempo against Michigan, they should be able to move the ball. Michigan's passing game, even with the performance of Andrew Anthony yesterday, it's not good. It's something that Penn State's secondary should build in the gate. So as good as Michigan's running backs are, you know, I still think that's a matchup that the Nittany Lions could take care of business, especially at home, and put yourself in position to still get the 8 or 9 wins this year.
Yeah, I mean, just the tempo thing is something that I think is so important. When they get tempo, I mean, they're a well-oiled machine. I mean, I did the numbers on the Ohio State game. 25% chance more likely to end up with a scoring chance opportunity once they get that first down. If they get two first downs, at least against Ohio State, that went up to 71% chance of scoring once they've got that second first down. So it's amazing once they get some rhythm and you get Sean Clifford in rhythm, they can do some good things. Specifically, Marty, what changed for you on the outlook for this the rest of the season? Like, what specifically can you point to and say, you know what, we are playing better, you know, at the defensive line than maybe you thought we were going to moving forward, or maybe the secondary is really holding their own enough? What specifically are you saying, you know what, Ohio State, what these guys did, now I feel better about them?
Well, to me, it's twofold. First and foremost, again, not to beat the dead horse here, but the health of Sean Clifford. Clifford being healthy is just a total game changer for this team, as we've seen. You know, Sean Clifford has taken a lot of flack during his time as Penn State quarterback, including from myself. That said, he's by far and away the most important player on this team, and we've seen that. You know, if Cliff doesn't get hurt, this team is at worst 7-1 right now. They beat Iowa, they beat Illinois, and then they probably still lose to Ohio State, but you're 7-1. So that's a big one. And also to me, seeing this team respond the way they did, I mean, from the start coming into this game, very few people thought they could even keep it close. And not only did they do that, there were times they had Ohio State on the ropes. And there was also two times in this game the Buckeyes got up by double digits and looked like they could run away with it. And Penn State came back swinging. you know, after that scoop and score on the Cliff fumble, they easily could have just curled up and died there. Instead, they got the field goal to end the half, scored to start the second half, tied the game. When Ohio State made it 27-17 again, they easily could have laid down and died. They put together a scoring drive. Keyvon Lee goes down and scores, and you pulled within a field goal. So it's the health of Clifford with the resiliency that we saw from this team on Saturday night that has me a lot more confident. Because, I mean, outside of those two things, I don't think anything really changed. You know, the defense, you still feel really good. The secondary is really awesome. Red zone defense is great. The defensive line, John Scott Jr. deserves a ton of credit for what he's done this year. They had depth issues, to start the season. And that was before you lost P.J. Mustafer and Hakeem Beamon and Adiz Isaac for the year. Yet the defensive line keeps humming along. So, you know, you still can't run the ball. You couldn't run the ball going into the Ohio State game. But the two things to me that really changed things for me coming out of this game is seeing that Sean Clifford does indeed look healthy with the fight we saw from this team Saturday night that has me once again believing they still can salvage things this year. Yes, this isn't going to be the special season it was looking like halfway through the second quarter against Iowa, but this is still a season that can get you to 8-9, maybe 10 wins if you run the table here and you know, keep this recruiting class intact and set up for success next year.
Yeah, you talked about two things that I want to ask you next, and that is, I always come to you when it comes to recruiting because you know what you're talking about. Why are we struggling, I guess it's a twofold question too. Why are we struggling to run the ball, and why do we not seem to be able to find offensive linemen? Although they are good recruits, that seem to not be able to get beaten like they stole something every single time we go up against a good defensive front. I mean, it seems like we are bringing guys with good measurables. We have a stable of really good, highly touted running backs, and yet they are highly, highly underperforming.
Yeah, that's definitely a frustrating thing for Penn State. It's a frustrating thing for James Franklin. I personally, and, you know, this is something – we've talked about ad nauseum in our Black Sheet Irish group chat on Slack. I don't think they struggle to identify talent on the offensive line. I think they struggle to develop said talent. You look at some of the offensive linemen they've had. Ryan Bates right now is a key contributor for the Buffalo Bills, who legitimately might be the best team in the NFL. Connor McGovern starts for the Cowboys, who another legitimate Super Bowl contender. Will Fries is a member of the 53-man roster for the Indianapolis Colts. You know, they don't struggle to identify the talent. It's developing the talent that's been the problem. You have Rashid Walker, for example, right now, left tackle, who coming into the season is viewed as a potential first round pick who just has steadily regressed. Michael Bennett was a 5-star recruit, one of the best offensive linemen in the country, had a good, not great career at Penn State. To me, the biggest issue is developing the offensive lineman more so than identifying. I will say, looking back on it, Matt Limegrover potentially got a bit of a raw deal with Penn State. His last year here as offensive line coach in 2019 was the best offensive line Penn State has had under Franklin. You know, by the end of the season, especially in that Cotton Bowl, they were just running the ball with ease. The Phil Troutwine hire to replace him was always a risky one. There was always that potential that his success as offensive line coach at Boston College was due to his head coach, Steve Adazio, being one of the best offensive line coaches in the country through two seasons at Penn State. Unfortunately, it seems like that may have been the case. But again, to me, the biggest issue with Penn State is not identifying and acquiring the offensive line talent. It's developing it. And I don't know if you can really throw that too much at the feet of Franklin. It's not like they're running his offense or something like that. You know, the Joe Moorhead offense and Ron A's offense is built off of that. And now Yursich running his stuff. It's always built on the offense coordinator. I do think the problem has been, you know, with the early years of Franklin was one thing because they just didn't have the talent on the offensive line coming out of the sanctioned years. And at the end of the Matt Limegrover years, you saw the offensive line starting to improve. And I do wonder if looking back on it, maybe he jumped the gun a bit by making that change offensive line coach from Limegrover to Troutwine. And now Penn State is suffering as a result because through his first two seasons, almost first two full seasons as offensive line coach, there's no denying that Phil Troutwine has been a major disappointment and been borderline a failure for the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, Lime Grover, a really awesome, nice guy too. So that was a tough one for me personally when they decided to let him go. Really, really fantastic guy, a really nice family as well. Last question for you, Marty. We'll let you get back to your Vikings game in a second. This defense has played remarkable. I mean, going in against Ohio State, we were wondering, which one's going to break? Which one's going to bend? Because both of them, strong versus strong as far as Ohio State's offense. And all things considered, if Penn State was able to move the ball just a little bit more and give their defense just a little bit more of a rest from time to time, you could probably argue that the defense would consider it a win against Ohio State, holding them to just two touchdowns and four field goals. What else can you ask from them moving forward if you had to nitpick on things? And how would you grade their season up to this point?
Yeah, the defense has been awesome. I have said it a few times now that I feel like this is the best defense Brent Pry has had. This is the best coaching job Brent Pry has done, especially when you consider some of the depth issues on the defensive line and the linebacker, especially on the defensive line where the depth is only continuing to get worse as the season has gone on. As for Saturday night, yeah, I think you saw, like you said, strength versus strength with Penn State's defense against Ohio State's offense. And I don't think either one of them necessarily won that battle. You know, the Buckeyes, yeah, they had their chunk plays. They're too good. They're going to get those. But ultimately, Penn State's defense held them to one touchdown on six red zone possessions. They held Ohio State's offense to just 26 points. So had you told me coming into the game that they were going to hold the Buckeye offense to 26 points, one of six in the red zone, I would take that all day. So I think ultimately that the defense did what they needed to do. And it's tough to really knock that defense too much this season. They have been tremendous. They basically were dubbed with having to win the game by themselves against Iowa once Clifford got hurt. And had it not been for one bust of coverage on what was a really good play design by Iowa, they would have done it. So, yeah, like I said, I think this is the best defense Pry has had. I think this is the best coaching job Pry has done. And I will say this offseason, if there's ever a time Brent Pry is going to leave for a head coaching job, I think it'd be this offseason. He will strike while the iron is hot. But at the same time, if Brent Pry hangs around, I think you could potentially start to see a scenario, maybe a Brent Venables type of deal, where maybe Pry's just happy being the defense coordinator at Penn State. And, you know, quite frankly, I feel confident saying a lot of Penn State fans would gladly take that.
Yeah, I know I would take that in a heartbeat. Were you okay with the defensive line moving forward? Do you feel better about that, real quick?
Yeah, you know, with the defensive line moving forward, I mean, the rest of the season, it's going to be a bit of a struggle just because you're short guys. Looking at a more of a long-term deal, you know, going into next year, you're going to have a good starting group. You get Adisa Isaac back, a defensive end. Nick Tarburton's had a really good year. You can throw in Denai Dennis Sutton, who's a five-star recruit, a defensive end. He's going to play. You know, you're probably going to hit the portal for another defensive end. But with the success Arnold Ebikade has had, you can really pitch that with recruiting kids out of the portal. And defensive tackle, you know, even after the season, obviously you lose PJ Mustafer, you lose Derek Tangelo, but you should get Hakeem Beamon back. Devon Ellis, very quietly, Devon Ellis has been awesome this year for this defensive line. Kasai Izzard is a redshirt freshman. He has looked like it at times. And other times you see him flash why he was a top 200 recruit. Izzard is going to be a stud for them. And in behind them, you know, you have Fatoruma Moba, Amin Vanover, who have flashed good things at time. And my biggest thing with this defensive line is John Scott Jr., to me, has earned some benefit of the doubt. He was really good with South Carolina. When Penn State hired him, South Carolina fans were not happy. And I've always said when a coach leaves a place to go to another job, if the team he's leaving, their fans are upset, that's usually a good sign for the team who's getting him. And he has produced multiple first-round picks, including Jason Owe at Penn State at this point. Ebikade is going to be high pick. So he's getting to the point where he can pitch that kind of stuff in recruiting and in the portal as well. But yeah, moving forward, the rest of the season, the defensive line is going to take its lumps at times, especially in submission schools. They're going to look to run the ball a lot, mainly because there are some depth concerns there. But long term, I think this defensive line should still be really, really good.
You know, yeah, it's kind of the one benefit of having a little depth is guys that are playing early are going to have a lot of experience moving forward. So, I mean, it does make you excited, even though there's some growing pains right now. But, yeah, I thought they played above expectation on Saturday. So, Marty, appreciate you joining. Congratulations on being the first guest on Hardcore Penn State Football. I appreciate you spending some time with us. Hopefully the Vikings can pull it out. I don't know what the score is right now. Are they doing all right?
Yeah, they're up 10-3 at halftime. So
okay, so they're hanging in there.
Dak Prescott not playing makes a big difference.
Well, you know, as soon as I turned it off and started preparing for this, they haven't scored a touchdown since. So you can blame me if they don't score until we finish things up here. So, Marty, appreciate you, man.
Absolutely, buddy. Anytime. I enjoy it.
All right. Well, that was Marty Leap from Black Shoe Diaries. Go check him out and go check out Black Shoe Diaries while you're over there. Do a lot of fantastic stuff. He's also on Twitter. He's a really good Twitter follow, so you should definitely go check him out at MSJ41817, which I'm not really sure what those numbers mean. But regardless, go give him a follow. He's a knowledgeable and yet sometimes very passionate football writer for Black Shoe Diary. So I want to go back to around the country real quick because I kind of jumbled around and missed something. So we're going to go back to around the country real quick and kind of see if we can get back to where we were here because I was all over the place. So, yeah, Iowa 27-7 loss to Wisconsin. Michigan State, I really thought they were done. Down by 16, came back and beat Michigan. Jim Harbaugh is kind of in hot water over there now, especially since he still has to play Ohio State and Penn State. I'm not really sure what's going to happen with him. If he goes 0-3 against Michigan State and Penn State and Ohio State this season, I think that might get the Wolverine fans a little more upset than just losing to Ohio State. So be very interested to see kind of where that ends up being. But a big win for Michigan State. There's no doubt about that. Pittsburgh, to the west of us. We gave them a little shout-out when they were able to beat Clemson for the first time. Unfortunately, maybe a big game let down, lost to Miami in a high-scoring affair. Pickett still ended up doing pretty well, but probably took a hit to his Heisman candidacy. And obviously, the ACC is pretty much down to just Wake Forest for potentially making it into the national, into the playoff, but it's not looking good right now. Georgia demolished Florida. Florida had a lot of turnovers that really hurt them. Otherwise, they were doing okay. But Georgia's looking like the team to beat right now. I think we'd all agree with that. The playoff rankings come out on Tuesday, and I would be deadly shocked if Georgia was not number one. The other team that we're not really sure, people weren't really sure where to put them, is Cincinnati. They had a little bit of a slow game against Tulane. Were able to separate eventually, but was kind of an ugly game by Cincinnati. They've had a couple ugly games now. Curious to see where the playoff committee has them. Auburn beats Ole Miss. Remember a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, everyone was saying, oh, Auburn is going to end up fifth or fourth in the SEC West. Well, now they are probably the second best team in the SEC West. So that win for Penn State continues to look impressive. And Kentucky lost to Mississippi State. I only bring that up because Kentucky now has their second loss. There was at least some rumbling by people in the state of Kentucky that, hey, if we went undefeated and our only loss was to Georgia, maybe we should be able to get in. Well, you got blown out by Georgia, and now you just lost to Mississippi State, so we can move on from that. I want to go back to the blue and the white now that we have wrapped up things with Marty. Again, the blue being the bad, the white being the good. We talked about the running game being bad. I also want to talk about the turnovers, because the turnovers were also not very good. And so I would like to bring up the turnovers. I mean, we got to find a way to be better when it comes to turnovers, right? I mean, we've got to find a way, in big games especially, to not turn the ball over in such crucial situations. Like I said, Clifford had the ball in his hands. We're only down by three, 24-27. And I know you want to take a shot. You trust Jahan Dotson, but that's just one of those throws he's going to really regret. It wasn't even close, and it set up another situation where most defenses probably give up a touchdown right there. They're very, very fortunate to be able to hold them to 3 points and give themselves yet another chance. But those things go a long way. And then having a turnover right after getting a turnover to start the game is the same thing. You can't do those things against elite programs. And that's something that I'm sure James Franklin will be harping on all week long. The final little poor note I want to mention is this offensive stalling. This is, again, comes back to that complementary football. If you can't find a way to cash in when your defense is playing good, and you can't find a way for your offense or for your defense to make a stop once your offense is playing good, if they're not in rhythm, you know, it's almost negligible. And unfortunately, I think that was the case and the reason they lost on Saturday. Again, to end the game with an interception, a punt, and a missed field goal, that's not going to cut it in the long run. It's just not going to cut it. So those are the bad things. But there are also some really good things. And again, it's important to be optimistic. It's important to be to believe. And I didn't just realize I did not change this from the blue. This obviously should be the white. But they fought hard, right? I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, they fought hard. There was multiple times in this game where Penn State could have just given up, right? They could have just said, you know what? We're not, you know, we got nothing to play for. We're throwing in the flag. Obviously, the scoop and score was one of those. But even the touchdown by Chris Olave, you're down all of a sudden now 10-7, and you come right back down the field and score. Like, that's fantastic. That's an amazing way to answer. Then the scoop and score happens. You go down, you get a field goal right before the half. Then you come out in the second half, and you get a touchdown right away. You can't ask for more resilience than that. Again, Ohio State goes down, scores a touchdown, and you come right back. Or you throw an interception, you hold them to a field goal. You punt, they get down there, you know, you stop them again. So just, I was very impressed with the fight and the resilience. I don't know if that stems from 2020 and how that year went, but this team seems to have a lot of 2016 in them, that kind of mindset, which can help out and win you some games down the stretch. The red zone defense, I mean, it's been phenomenal. Ohio State was a number three red zone offense as far as touchdown conversion percentage goes in the red zone. So the percentage of them scoring touchdowns in the red zone. And Penn State just shut them down in the red zone. I mean, it was a phenomenal job. You really can't ask for a better effort. And you bending but not breaking has been the best. They are officially the number one team in the country in touchdown red zone defense now. And to get to that mark after playing Ohio State is nothing short but impressive. Those are the type of things that elite teams do. And it's impressive that this defense has been really that great. Finally, the receiving corps. Can we give a shout-out to the receiving corps? I mean, everyone talked all week, including me, about how good Ohio State's receivers were, right? How great, you know, Ohio State's receivers were. And they were great. They were great. Let's not say they're not great. But you could argue that Penn State's receivers were better on Saturday. Because if you look at the numbers, Jahan Dotson, 11 catches for 127, and he had a rushing touchdown. Parker Washington, who just played phenomenal, especially over the middle, 9 catches for 108. Keandre Lambert-Smith, 4 catches for 49 yards. On the other side for Ohio State, Jackson Smith and Jigba, who I think is probably the most talented guy, although Brandon Smith found a way to go down and chase him down. Then actually wasn't the one that made the tackle, but Brandon Smith showed his speed because you're chasing down Smith and Jigba like it was nothing. I was very impressed with that. He had 6 catches for 97 yards. Garrett Wilson, 7 catches for 82 yards. Chris Olave, 3 catches for 44 yards in the touchdown. Rucker was also in there with the tight end, 3 catches for 57 yards. All in all, receiving numbers-wise, Penn State had 361. Ohio State had 305. Penn State caught 23 more passes than Ohio State. So, very, very good showing for Penn State's defense, or for Penn State's receiver, excuse me. I was really impressed with that. Obviously, not the same in the rushing department. John Lovett had the most carries, 13 carries for only 20 yards, averaged 1.5 yards per carry. The longest run by anybody was Noah Cain. He had one run for 11 yards. Obviously, had that fumble. Not great. And you know what? Ohio State, I was surprised to a certain degree. Kind of a one-trick pony as far as the the rushing department. They didn't have Master Teague. I thought Mayan Williams would still get some carries, but Trayvon Henderson was a workhorse. 28 carries for 152 yards and a touchdown. Obviously, that 68-yard run was sort of a big moment in the game. But all in all, we said that we needed Trayvon Henderson under 150 total yards. He only had one catch for 7 yards, which I'm just absolutely shocked by. I thought they were going to get the screen game going a lot more. They didn't do that. But instead, 158 total yards for Trayvon Henderson. So right at the fringe there. I'm just saying, you take out that 68-yard run, you're able to contain him for that one run. He's under the total 150 yards, and who knows? Maybe Penn State wins the game, and I look like a genius. But maybe that's not the case. I don't know. But I thought those are the good, those are the bad things. Let's get more specific into the offense now. I want to talk a couple more things about this offense because, again, there were some really good things they did, and there's just a couple more notes that I would like to highlight that really impressed me. And I'm just going to read them off for you. We mentioned this with Mari DeLeap, 25% greater chance of scoring once they've gotten that first down, 40% greater chance of scoring when getting their second first down. And I think that's just – it's just a moment to realize how once Mike Yurcich gets your defense on the field and doesn't let you substitute, he can go after you. And he can be tenacious and he will dissect you. And having a quarterback like Sean Clifford 100%, now you have two guys kind of reading the same book or on the same page. And that makes a big difference when you're calling plays. And I'm excited to see what they can do against some teams. Like Marty said, I think they can do some cool things against Michigan because Michigan really likes to substitute. They got caught a couple times against Michigan State, so that will be interesting. Already kind of mentioned this. The longest run was by Noah Cain, had 11 yards. I will want to say, though, there was two positives in the running game that we hadn't seen. I thought Lovett had moments where he would run downhill and have a little bit of a – I don't know, urgency, sense of urgency to him where he actually was trying to get from point A to point B as fast as he could, and he hit the holes hard, and that's at least a positive sign. I think Noah Cain would have done that too, but obviously he fumbled the football and he didn't get very much playing time after that. We did convert on some third and shorts, and we were actually really good on third down in general. The third and shorts was a very surprisingly good. I mean, we were running for third and twos, and weren't even thinking twice about it, so that was also a positive. The tight ends got involved. Theo Johnson, 4 catches for 41 yards. Brenton Strange, 4 catches for 17 yards. He was also – Theo Johnson and Brenton Strange both had great blocks in this game too. Theo Johnson had that great block on a long – I think it was a 32-yard catch by Parker Washington in the first drive. Theo Johnson just de-cleated somebody. Like, oh, my goodness. And I think Strange got a good block on the Kevon Lee touchdown. It's nice to see those guys involved. I think we talked about this on Thursday. I think when they get involved in the receiving game, they will block better. And we kind of saw that a little bit on Saturday. Additionally, I was really impressed with the way they got back to the short passing game, right? They went back to the short passing game. I love seeing Theo Johnson in the short passing game because I think he picks up 6 yards every time because you're asking a defensive back to try to tackle that guy in space, and he's always going to fall forward. So I like seeing Theo Johnson get involved there. But again, stalling at the worst times is probably the biggest knock on this offense I can have. Didn't score a single point in the fourth quarter, and that's not going to do it against Ohio State on the road. That's kind of been something that Penn State's starting to make a habit of against Ohio State in the shoe, is not score very much in that fourth quarter. Having a really good third quarters is pretty typical at this point, I feel like. But yeah, the fourth quarters haven't been great. And Sean Clifford, again, thank God he's closer to 100% than I could ever imagine. I was sitting here on Thursday saying, how could he be that much better? But he was that much better. So I don't know what they gave him or what, but he was a completely different person than we saw against Illinois. So that was a pleasant sight to see. He did have two crucial mistakes, and he was pressured all night. But man, that dude hung in there, and he is a leader. And you cannot knock him for that. I mean, he is He's the guy you want in your foxhole. I mean, that's the best way to say it. Let's go ahead and talk about the defense now. Not that many more notes, but I think there's some things worth at least mentioning. The defensive line, in my opinion, played really well, all things considered. You know, there's things you can nitpick, but all in all, I would say the defense played really well. I loved how they were attacking downhill the entire time. They were not scared to really pin in the rushing game for Ohio State. They did not let Henderson really get to the outside. They were crashing the edges extremely hard. Curtis Jacobs played absolutely out of his mind. Like, the dude played possessed, and that was probably his best game of his career, I would argue. And I thought the defensive line played good. I thought Ebukadi, who didn't necessarily play great against Illinois, was like, hey, I'm not going to get bullied in the run game today. He was shoving offensive linemen. I was very impressed with Arnold Ebukadi and how he kind of responded from that Illinois game. I thought the linebackers in general responded extremely well. And they really did stop Ohio State to just 19 yards of rushing in the first half. For Ohio State. Obviously, they wore us down a little bit more in the second half, but that's something you can build on. The secondary. Again, we went over the receivers stats for Ohio State, but overall, I mean, Joey Porter Jr. played physical. He played tough. He played handsy. He played grabby, and he was all over Olave. You kind of just have to, you know, tip your hat to when there's a turnover or a penalty, but, you know, if you're Joey Porter Jr., you're like, hey, I'm not going to make it easy for you, and he didn't. I thought Castro Fields played pretty well, too, all things considered. I mean, it is extremely tough and stressful on a defense when you have so many great weapons that can all house it and are all almost deserving of double coverage. You can't double cover all of them. I thought the secondary played remarkably well. You're going to give up some third and longs against Ohio State, but they showed that they were up to the task. They were. There's two plays that really hurt the defense, that 54-yard catch and run by Njigba and that 68-yard run by Henderson. They're going to get those, but when you look back on it, you say, wow, if it wasn't for just those two plays, Penn State's defense has really kind of controlled Ohio State's offense. But what are you going to do? I mean, the athletes are going to be athletes. Again, held Ohio State just 2 touchdowns and 4 field goals. And again, at late in the game, this defense continues to play their best football, right? I mean, holding Ohio State to a turnover on downs and then a couple field goals. You can't ask for much more late in the game when they're dog tired. I was very impressed. Very also surprised. Sometimes we talked about this on Thursday too. Like, why didn't they go, you know, ground heavy? They did it for the opening series where they ended up having a false start and kicking the field goal. They went with an I formation. They were pounding it. And then they never went really back to it again. And I think Ryan Day got a little bit cute. I mean, I think he had opportunities to maybe ground and pound it a little bit more and, you know, kind of ground us into submission. And he decided not to. And they gave us a chance. We got some good pressure on CJ Stroud. I got to tip my hat. There was that one pass where Ebukadi is right in Stroud's face, and he's able to complete the ball to Ruckert for a first down. That was kind of a dagger. Very impressed with Stroud. He's not an athletic guy as far as running around, but it didn't seem to matter. We weren't able to get a sack on him. But all in all, I would say that the defense played pretty freaking well. That's pretty much it for the Ohio State recap. We have talked about it pretty extensively. We had Marty Leap come on from Black Shoe Diary. I do want to say that we have a game on Saturday. So that means we shall be back here on Thursday night. That's the plan, at least. We're going to see what ends up happening. Hopefully we'll be back on Thursday night to kind of to look ahead to this Maryland game. This Maryland team is an interesting team because I don't really know what to expect from them. It's at Maryland. They're 5-3, but really they're 2-3 in the conference. It's hard to really know what to expect from Maryland at this point because they're not looking great. But they're not looking great at all. And although they started the season extremely hot, ever since they lost to Iowa, It's gone downhill. Penn State is favored by 11 in this one. Over under is set at 55.5. And again, like I said, Penn State did lose to Maryland last year, so kind of interested to see how that one, if that is a little bit of added motivation for Penn State. Maryland beat Indiana 38-35, but before that was on a three-game losing streak to Iowa, Ohio State, and Minnesota. They lost to Minnesota 34-16. They lost to Ohio State 66-17. So just to kind of give you an idea of where they're at, their defense is allowing 400 yards per game right now, and they're allowing 30 points per game. So take that for what it is. You're going to have to find a way to slow down Tagovailoa. He's a pretty athletic, good quarterback. But otherwise, I don't really know how good Maryland's going to be. If we see Penn State from Ohio State's game, I think they win comfortably. If we see an Illinois repeat, they'll probably lose by 10 points. But that's where we're at. We'll obviously break down the Maryland game in much, much more detail on Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Yeah, that's all I have. I appreciate you guys being here. Appreciate you hanging out with me. Again, we will be back on Thursday. Until then, make sure you're following us on Twitter, Hardcore PSU Football. We're also on TikTok and Instagram, everywhere else. Make sure you're subscribed to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. Watch me live. Talk to me live in the chat. I'm here hanging out with y'all. But that will be it for tonight's show. Appreciate you guys again. If you're not already, if you're watching on the audio, make sure you subscribe wherever you're watching the pod or listening to the podcast. I appreciate that as well. Peace out, everyone. I will talk to you guys next time. Bye. Thank you.